Production support for Earth Eats comes from Charles Schwab & Company, Incorporated, whose local branch is now located at 1155 College Mall Road. Independent branch leader Jeremy Zeichner, CFP, and team offer personalized financial plans matched to investors' goals. More at schwab.com/Bloomington. And need more coffee roasters? A woman-owned coffee bar and roastery dedicated to roasting organic, direct trade, and fair trade coffee from small-scale farmers around the world. Offering signature drinks, teas, and little eats. Located on Pete Ellis Drive. NeedMoreRoasters.com.
I grow tomatoes at my house.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. My mom's such a good shot, she was shooting cherry tomatoes off their stems.
Today on Earth Eats, we meet some kids in an after-school garden club at Benjamin Franklin Elementary in Terre Haute, Indiana. Mark Minster leads the program, and we talk with him about inquiry-based learning and find out what a sprouting potato might have in common with a Minecraft mob. Harvest Public Media has a story on how the EPA and the courts are dealing with pesticide drift. And we've got a recipe for a caffeinated frozen dessert, perfect for the dog days of summer. That's all coming up, so stay tuned to Earth Eats. Hey, Alex.
Hey, Kate.
You got any news for us?
I do. Support for Trump in farm country continues to be pretty high in spite of a trade war with China and a slump in soybean prices. And we have a report that the large number of food recalls this year might be a good thing. A new poll indicates farmers support President Trump less than they did in the last election, though other polls show steady or rising support overall in farm states. A poll from agriculture magazine Farm Futures this week showed that only 78% of farmers who voted for President Trump in 2016 would still vote for him today. The magazine surveyed 924 farmers from July 20th to August 2nd. The poll zeroed in on trade wars as a key factor in the drop. Out of the farmers surveyed, 40% said that the president's actions on trade have done permanent damage to agriculture. But farmers showed strong support in other areas, with 86% in favor of the president's drive to reduce regulations and 90% supporting White House actions on immigration. The poll results come as the White House rolls out tariffs on another $16 billion in Chinese imports. The move prompted Chinese newspapers to warn the U.S. not to swing the stick of hegemony against China. Meanwhile, a separate and broader poll from Morning Consult for CNBC showed that rural support in key agriculture states is rising or staying the same overall. Approval for Trump among rural voters in Iowa increased, despite a dip in the price of soybeans. And in Indiana, 56% of rural voters approved of Trump between January and May, with that number increasing to 60% in July. There's been a number of food recalls in the United States this year, ranging from E. coli in lettuce to intestinal parasites in wraps sold at McDonald's and grocery stores. But that could be a good sign, says Lana Nwadike. She's a food safety researcher with Kansas State University and the University of Missouri.
So, you know, in addition to investigators doing a better job of seeing that there is potential problems or that sort of thing, I think, you know, companies are maybe doing a better job of reporting those things as well.
But even though the U.S. is better at tracking infections from food, Nwadike says no food is explicitly safe. For those sensitive to illness, she says it's best to avoid sprouts and raw dairy products and cook food before eating it. And that's the news. Thanks to Chad Bouchard and Harvest Public Media.
And thank you, Alex.
My pleasure, Kate.
From controlling weeds and insects in your garden to growing a bumper crop of corn, pesticides help some growers get the most out of their plants. But Harvest Public Media's Madeline Beck reports there are issues with the chemicals. Sometimes they drift off course and may cause health problems.
Pesticides aren't just in fields. They're in courtrooms around the U.S.
There have been several lawsuits filed over dicamba, which for the last few years has drifted into unwanted territory, killing crops like soybeans and pitting neighbor against neighbor. A case in California alleges the pesticide Roundup causes cancer. And this summer, Ninth Circuit federal judges heard a case against a pesticide used on crops that the Environmental Protection Agency was set to ban because it hurt children's mental development. The agency didn't follow through, which seemingly frustrated Judge Jacqueline Nguyen.
How long can EPA sit on this?
In August, the judges told the EPA it has 60 days to finalize the ban. All of this has some people who live next to crop fields worried.
Yeah, I would be interested if there are issues or health concerns.
That's Laura Wetherell. Her family lives next to a cornfield in Champaign, Illinois, and had the Midwest Center for Investigative Reporting put an air sampler outside their house. It's one of six in eastern Illinois to find out which pesticides might be drifting onto houses, playgrounds, and schools. Superintendent Scott Watson agreed to host one at a school in Bismarck, about an hour away from Champaign. He's interested in the results, but says pesticide drift isn't something he usually thinks about.
I grew up out in the country. I mean, I lived around farmers. I worked with farmers and stuff growing up as a kid, so I'm used to it. And you think that when your kids go outside that they're safe. And you hope that stands true, but you just never know.
Some states like California mandate buffer zones for certain pesticides, keeping a distance around schools and waterways. In much of the Midwest, state-mandated buffer zones don't exist. But pesticide labels, which are approved by federal agencies, often do have certain setbacks.
Any pesticide that's being sprayed, it's extremely important to read that label ahead of time.
And Troy Kazier would know. He's with Monsanto in western Illinois. He says there are other things to look for on the label, too. Wind speed, the height from which the pesticide is dropped, and the type of nozzle used to spray.
On a windy day, try to throw a ping pong ball at somebody and it blows away pretty easy. Well, you can toss a basketball right to them. And it's the same concept with spray droplets.
Small droplets or high winds can throw pesticides off course. But if some drifts into a yard, Kazier says it breaks down pretty quickly by design, and small doses are less toxic than chemicals found around the home. But direct exposure is a health concern, which is why large-scale pesticide applicators wear heaps of protective equipment and have to get a license to spray. University of Iowa is a leader in pesticide drift research. Jenna Gibbs, a scientist there, says many of the pesticides notorious for drifting in Iowa either have some EPA-backed evidence of causing cancer or too few health studies to know for sure.
We do know that all of them are pretty irritating compounds. They're irritating to the respiratory system and to the skin and to the eyes.
That's at high enough levels, though. Last spring, she and other researchers put 13 air sensors around Iowa City. All of them found measurable levels of pesticides used in farming, even near downtown. But according to preliminary findings,
we don't feel like they're high enough to be a concern.
This didn't include testing during the summer, when potentially more toxic pesticides used to kill insects are often sprayed from planes. But there are plans to research that in the future. Gibbs uses pesticides on her own farmland and knows the challenges farmers face. And she expects research and technology to lead to better pesticides and possibly robots.
The more we rely on robots and drones, maybe we have some device that can go out and target really, really close and spray only specific areas.
The future is nearly here. Companies are working on a Roundup replacement. Farmers have already started to use less of the newly banned pesticide, and those robots are hitting the fields, testing out pesticide sprayers. Madeline Beck, Harvest Public Media.
Harvest Public Media covers our food system from the heartland. Visit their website, harvestpublicmedia.org. Production support comes from Elizabeth Rue, enrolled agent with Personal Financial Services, assisting businesses and individuals with tax preparation and planning for over 15 years. More at personalfinancialservices.net. The Clean Bedroom, offering organic mattresses, adjustable beds, and pillows, helping mindful customers create a sustainable and organic clean bedroom step by step. New York City, Boston, and now Indianapolis. More at thecleanbedroom.com. and Charles Schwab & Company, Incorporated, whose local branch is now located at 1155 College Mall Road. Independent branch leader Jeremy Zeichner, CFP, and team offer personalized financial plans matched to investors' goals. More at schwab.com/Bloomington.
Benjamin Franklin Elementary School.
And what is your name?
Andrea. We play at the playground. We grow stuff like pumpkins, flowers, bok choy, strawberries, fruit, and all kinds of veggies.
Andrea is describing Garden Club, an after-school program at Benjamin Franklin Elementary in Terre Haute, Indiana. The kids in Vigo County are back to school this week, but I visited their garden club in the spring when the garden season was just getting started.
My name is Mark Minster, and I teach at Rose Holman. I'm an associate professor of English. I teach in what's been called the HERE program, the Home for Environmentally Responsible Engineering. And so this started out of our interest in sustainability, and we wanted student projects for our college students. And I was in Rochester, New York, and they have a program there called Rochester Roots, and they get students from RIT to work with students in local elementary schools in disadvantaged neighborhoods. And they work with the kids, they build gardens, and it's a teaching opportunity for the college students and a learning opportunity for the college students as well as it is for the elementary school students. So it seemed like a nice way to get Rose Holman students out into the Terre Haute community to work with others. What I want to do is I want to develop the infrastructure, get the after-school program curriculum where it's working so that this year, 2017-18, the school year, is our baseline. And then next year we work on improvement over that baseline, and then it gets in a position where we can hand it off. We are out here Tuesdays and Thursday afternoons, 25 weeks during the year. You know, they're inside all day, so it's nice to be able to get them outside as much as possible. We actually have ponchos for the kids in case, so that if the weather's warm enough, and even if it's raining, we're okay with that. We meet for 2 hours. It would be nice, I guess, to go just a little bit longer for people who work till 5, but we also don't want to overdo it because, again, kids have been in school all day. Actually, had a teacher say it's nice that at the end of a day of being in school, they can really do some learning. Which is it's a dark way of looking at it, but what's nice about what we're doing is even though we are also tied to Indiana academic standards, ours is totally inquiry-based. We have things that we want them to learn, but we don't have to do it, right? They're not tested on any of this, and so if a kid comes up with a question, like, why is this growing and not that, we can run with that and we can explore that. And so we can like whatever comes up, we can follow their questions, which to me is the foundation of learning for science, right? Is just exploring what are their questions. Mm-hmm. So that's the payoff for us from Rose Holman's side of things, is from the science, technology, engineering, and math side. What do you do with inquiry? Like, where do those questions come from? And then what could you do? Like, so you're having problems with your tomatoes. Well, what do you think is causing those problems? Why are they purple? Why are they yellow? Should they be? Should the stems be so purple? And we can research that, and we can compare, and we can test. That's from the science side of things. And then when it comes to solving them, well, what could we do to solve that? That's a little bit of science, but it's also a little bit of engineering, right? What solutions can we have to this? Do we need new drip? Do we need new soil? Do we need better lighting? Do we need a better location? It's problem solving. So, and it's problem solving you can eat. We get to eat some of what we've grown, which is really nice. Last fall, we harvested corn that we had planted over there in a Three Sisters garden. So we'd mounded it up and did the indigenous style of corn, beans, and squash. And we made cornbread from the corn that we grew. We grew blue corn, cornmeal corn, and we grew popcorn, and we ate the popcorn. And then we cooked up the beans, and we ate pumpkin muffins and ate pumpkin seeds, so all that stuff got consumed. And we try to fold in what it is that we're talking about with what we're eating. So this week, for instance, we're talking about potatoes. So we have a book that we'll read about potatoes. I've got some hash browns in there that we'll eat. And later today, they're going to cut seed potatoes. We'll cut them today, and then we'll plant the seed potatoes on Thursday. And at this point, we're now working through the Junior Master Gardener curriculum so that all the kids will be certified as Junior Master Gardeners by the time they're done with the program in a couple weeks. So, and they'll get little certificates. We're going to have T-shirts. They'll be certified. But it's only 10 weeks of the year. So in the fall, we have our own curriculum that's more designed from a kind of sustainability perspective. We're thinking ecologically in terms of the whole life cycle of things. So we get them to think about inputs and outputs of a system. So what goes into a garden? What comes out of a garden? What are all the inputs? What are all the outputs? What are all the various processes in there? And that comes true with eating, too. I'm looking at the tables right now that are set. All of that food that's there comes from somewhere, and it goes somewhere. Before they come in, I'm going to have to get their compost bucket. So like they know to scrape the food into the compost bucket. They know to put the recycling off to the side, and then the trash, whatever's left, a little bit of trash goes into the trash can. But we've got a compost bucket right outside that shed that we put together. So the kids help compost.
One of the great things about Mark's approach is that he doesn't just explain how things work or tell the kids exactly what to do. He lets them experiment and discover on their own. For instance, with the compost, he let them put whatever they wanted into it.
So the very first day when they were experimenting with compost, I had some kids put water bottles in there, and some kids put like plastic wrappers. But that's all part of the process, is that some only put food scraps, and others put plastic, others put paper, they put their napkins in there.
They'll check back later to see which things decomposed and which ones didn't. Probably a more memorable method than a set of rules of what goes in and what doesn't. Garden Club starts with some free time outside. Kids draw on the sidewalk with chalk, run around on the playground, while some of the adults get snacks ready inside. Today's snack includes hash browns to make the connection to one of the garden activities.
We are having a pretzel, orange, hash browns, a banana, bread, and I have sauce on it. Hash browns taste like hash browns.
What are they made from?
They're made out of hash browns and potatoes, because hash browns are made out of potatoes.
After their snack is cleaned up, they gather around one of the college students for a story about, you guessed it, potatoes.
When all of my friends are on the carpets, we will be ready for Maggie to read us.
We took it on the carpet.
So this is two old potatoes and me. Last spring at my dad's house, I found two old potatoes in the back of the cupboard. They were so old, sprouts were growing from their eyes. Gross, I tossed them in the trash. Wait, Dad said, I think we can grow new potatoes with those. I'll call your grandpa, he'll know. After talking with Grandpa, Dad and I took the potatoes to the sunniest spot in the garden. We dug, we picked out rocks, we raked the soil smooth.
Then the kids head back outside for some hands-on gardening. They start out transplanting some pepper and tomato seedlings that have outgrown their pots.
So let's do this first. Before we get any plants, let's get soil. In your groups, can you start to...
I'll go after second.
Here's what we're going to do. Let's
go to your group. We'll bring around the soil.
So this is one of Gabe's. Everyone will have two that you will get to transplant. How do you know this needs a new pot?
Because the roots.
Because the roots are sticking out all the way at the bottom. Those are like 3 inches sticking out of the bottom. So what we're going to need to do, I'm going to use one that Gabe probably won't use. That's a nice looking one. This one is a little bit smaller. It's the runt of the litter. Aww. Oh, poor guy. Well, we don't have to kill it. It might not be one that we choose to do that with. So we're going to very gently peel off the outside. See that? And then you see the roots coming down through the bottom. It's kind of holding together nicely. Then what we will do, your assistance please. First we will have some soil in our new pots, and then we will plop that in there gently, making sure that we create plenty of room for that root. After that, we'll water it. So we will end up with two pepper plants. Yeah? Questions about this? Do you have questions?
But it's not all fun and games. Sometimes Garden Club can get a little bit chaotic.
Scoop it! Oh, that got in my eye!
That's part of the fun.
See the roots coming out of the bottom?
Yeah.
All right.
The transplanted seedlings will eventually go home with the kids to plant with their families. The Garden Club program works with families in the neighborhood to get a raised bed garden plot started at home if they're interested. They set them up with the structure, the soil, the plants, and some know-how. Amy Cotton is one of the parent volunteers. She talked about what it's meant for her kids to nurture plants at home.
Well, and a lot of things that the kids have brought home, too, are ready to be transplanted. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to be doing that. And they're really excited. Like, they did that. That's, you know, something they created. And that makes them happy.
That sense of pride.
Yeah. Like, they did that. Yeah. And it makes them happy.
I remember Blake being happy about his beans.
Oh, he was ecstatic about his beans. They got so huge, and then the cat ate them. Of course, she ate some lettuce we had too. But he was like, Bob, you have to take a picture. We have to show that to Mark. Like, they grew probably about that tall, started falling over. The cat started eating them. But for them to get that big, you know, that was like a big accomplishment for him. And he was stoked, so stoked.
The last activity for Garden Club is getting potatoes ready for planting. The kids gather around Mark as he holds up a potato with sprouting eyes. He asks the kids questions about what they observe.
These are going to be roots. You're absolutely right about that. But this is a little bit different. What do you notice about the very end? Can you see?
It's like one of those squids from Minecraft.
It does kind of.
Yeah, it really does. It's got tentacles.
It looks like a hand. Well, on plants, what are the kind of things that open up that look kind of like hands?
A flower.
A flower.
Leaves.
These are little potato leaves. All of this is going to go under the ground, and it's going to turn into potatoes. How is it going to turn into more potatoes, do you think? This is all going to be a root, but the potato that we eat is a tuber. So how is it going to turn into a tuber? How is it going to turn into something else? Why do we eat foods like potatoes? What does it give us? Nutrients. Yeah, it's got sugars and starches, which are all the kinds of things that give us energy. Well, it gives the plant energy too. And so those carbohydrates, it's gonna take the light from the sun, and what else is it gonna breathe in? What else do plants breathe in? We breathe in oxygen, and what do we breathe out?
It's right
carbon
there.
Dioxide.
Carbon dioxide, excellent, yeah. And plants breathe in carbon dioxide. So they're going to take that carbon dioxide and that light and that energy, and that's going to turn into potatoes. So from this one potato, we can get as many as it decides to make. But you know what? We can get more than that, because everywhere there is an eye on this potato can be a different potato plant. Yep. So what we have to do before we plant this is to cut it and let that be. There's going to be one potato plant. Two potato plant. Did you ever do that thing where you say one potato, two potato, three potato, four? You do that?
That's in the book. Yeah, that's in the book. That was in the book.
Red. That's right. Potato, six potato, seven potato, more.
Thank you so much.
And so we've come full circle. The kids are connecting the potato planting lesson with the story they just heard inside. With the aroma of hash browns still lingering in the air, it's almost time to start cleaning up and heading home. School's back in session at Benjamin Franklin Elementary. Chances are the kids in Garden Club will get to dig up those potatoes they planted in the spring. Maybe they'll cook up some more hash browns for an afternoon snack. Some call it granita, some call it granite. But however you pronounce it, it's a refreshing dessert idea for these hot summer nights. Think of it as a cross between a snow cone and a sorbet. And this one has an adult twist, using coffee and Kahlua for the base. I'll let Chef Daniel Orr of Farm Bloomington Restaurant tell you how it's done.
We're going to take 2 cups of coffee. We're going to take 1/2 cup of sugar, and we're going to stir that in. Okay, and you want to use hot coffee, and then that's going to dissolve the sugar and make a syrup. We're going to kick up that flavor a little bit. I'm going to add some orange zest. Now, when you use orange zest, you want to use organic oranges, because most oranges have been sprayed. And so if you're going to use the exterior, you really want to pick organic. And we're just going to grate that. And you can really smell those essential oils coming out of the orange. And then we're going to juice the orange. So just cut it in half. And we're just going to squeeze that orange right into our coffee mixture. Little stir. Now the sugar and the alcohol are what's going to keep this from getting super, super ice cube solid. So the alcohol we're using is Kahlua, which is a Mexican coffee liqueur. We're going to add about an ounce and a half of that. Then you just put this in the freezer. Go back to it after about an hour and a half, 2 hours. You can start to shave it and then let it sit overnight. And then the next day you're going to have your granite. And I've pulled this out of the freezer a little bit ahead of time, so it would soften up a little bit. But you can see how that shaves like a nice Italian shaved ice. I'm going to grab a dish. It's best to have your dish either frozen or refrigerated so it doesn't melt as soon as you put it into your bowl. And we're just going to dish this out into one of Grandma's old bowls. A little bit of whipped cream on top, and we're going to garnish it with a couple coffee beans and a little piece of orange. And so that is our coffee granite with Kahlua and citrus.
Yeah, that's really nice. I love how you can taste that zest just a little bit.
Yeah, it has a nice balance to it.
You can taste the zest and the balance for yourself. This is an easy one. We have the recipe and even a video this time showing all the steps and the finished product. You can't go wrong. Just go to eartheats.org to get started. Remember that we love to hear from you. Send us an email, tell us what you like, what you don't like, what you'd like to hear more of, eartheats@gmail.com. Or leave us a review on your favorite podcast listening place. Yeah, wherever you hear us, we'd love to hear from you. Production support comes from Need More Coffee Roasters, a woman-owned coffee bar and roastery dedicated to roasting organic, direct trade, and fair trade coffee from small-scale farmers around the world. Offering signature drinks, teas, and little eats. Located on Pete Ellis Drive, needmoreroasters.com. Elizabeth Rue, enrolled agent with Personal Financial Services, assisting businesses and individuals with tax preparation and planning for over 15 years. More at personalfinancialservices.net. And The Clean Bedroom, offering organic mattresses, adjustable beds, and pillows, helping mindful customers create a sustainable and organic clean bedroom, step by step. New York City, Boston, and now Indianapolis. More at thecleanbedroom.com. The Earth Eats crew includes Aabon Binder, Chad Bouchard, Alex Chambers, Mark Chilla, Taylor Killow, Daniel Orr, all the folks at Farm Bloomington Restaurant, the IU Food Institute, and Harvest Public Media. Special thanks this week to Mark Minster and everyone at Benjamin Franklin's Garden Club. Earth Eats theme music is composed by Aaron Toby and performed by Aaron and Matt Toby. Our executive producer is John Bailey. That's it for our show. Thanks for listening to Earth Eats. I'm Kate Young. See you next time.